Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 29th of October, 2020. And yesterday is such a bad day. Apparently, I've lost my voice. We'll see if we can get through the podcast. But in the U.S., equity selling off to the tune of 3.5 to 4%. Peter, take us where you think. Take us through where you think the focus is. It just seemed like it was very broad selling across the board.
Yeah, and it was it was one of those days where it also smelled a little bit like forced selling and deleveraging across the board, because you had the initial sell off, which was pretty steep, or sharp sell off, and then gold was actually up in the initial session, and maybe Ole can chip in a very few seconds here. But then over time, as the session progressed, Europe was just bleeding more and more, and suddenly you also had a pretty significant decline in gold as well, and it just smelled of this forced selling across the board. And I think Europe in general is an extremely bad session, because not only in local currencies it was the worst performing equity segment globally, but also if you the rise in the dollar from a foreign investor perspective, it was just terrible. And as you can see here, you put it on slide one, John, you put in the S&P 500. We're trying to bounce back this morning. We had an initial failure in Europe to bounce back, but now, just before we went into the studio, it seems like we're now trying a second attempt of rebounding. But I think those lows from yesterday, and also the lows that you have highlighted on slide one, John, back from September, I mean, it's absolutely crucial that we can hold these levels. Otherwise, I think we're opening up an entire highway basically to run lower, because the things are looking dire. We're not getting the fiscal deal in the US, and we're looking into lockdowns here in Europe again.
Yeah, the lockdowns announced in France, where we're seeing non-essential retail closed, bars and restaurants closed until December 1st. And on that slide one, if you look at that 3200 level, that is that key level you're mentioning. And we've also been talking about the 100-day moving average, or the purple moving average you can see on that chart, which is right around where we're trading this morning, not far below 3300. but in FX space, and I'm sorry, I'll let you get to gold in a moment. I think the interesting thing was, of course, a sudden weakening in those currencies that have been surprisingly resilient, especially the things like the commodity currencies, the Aussie, CAD, Kiwi, finally coming unglued on the force of this sort of risk deleveraging, and Aussie suddenly trading back towards that 70 level. I've got that in, it's just a basic chart, but I've got it on slide four if you want to have a look there. And then the yen as well, sort of a fellow traveler. We've been talking about the yen strength here, and that's coincided with quite a consistent rally until yesterday in the U.S. Treasuries. And I just think yesterday was exceptionally interesting on that front, because we saw a treasury market that it rallied again as risk deleveraging was going on, but later in the session actually sold off, and we saw treasuries closing lower on the day. So yields actually ticking up slightly on one of the worst days we've seen since the COVID train wreck back in the spring. You can see that on slide five. So yesterday's bar there showing yields basically unchanged on the day, despite the big deleveraging, a big warning to those expecting for these safe haven bonds to be a safe haven. That lack of performance I find exceptionally interesting. And maybe that's something that was feeding a little bit of the gold weakness yesterday. Ole, I don't know what your thoughts are there, but certainly gold was also weak yesterday.
Well, I think the whole commodity space just took a bit of a hit yesterday, because it has been an emerging theme in recent months that the reflation trade should provide some support to commodities. We've seen obviously the strong rally in the grain markets, which has been fundamentally driven due to weather developments. But yes, you are right. I just highlighted on slide seven crude oil and gold as two of the major commodity markets. They're both the crude oil is right now is really came to the edge yesterday. This 38.70 level in Brent. We can see how we've been stuck within this range now for the $5 range now for the past couple of months. And if we do break below that, then we could see potentially a 10% extension to the downside. Gold broke below its 100-day moving average, and that just triggered a wave of selling. But I think the dollar was king yesterday, and that dollar strength really was the key trigger for these markets. On slide six, it's just taken from the weekly cut report that I produce on Mondays. Just because what is risk off? Well, risk off is reducing exposure, and so we know there are big longs right now across some of the commodity space. We got longs in oil, we got in natural gas, we got in copper, and then of course across the whole grain sector. And if there is a if there is an escalated risk of potentially coming through the stock market, as we talked about, then these are the markets which are most exposed. Not because the fundamentals have suddenly turned sour or changed dramatically towards a worsening outlook, but just simply because positions need to be reduced, and that obviously will create some opportunities. I would say, especially something like gold and silver, if we do see an extension here from the levels we saw yesterday, then I still view that as a buying opportunity, because the world is not, we still got rock bottom rates, we still got more fiscal and monetary support coming in. And I think in our morning meeting, the internal morning meeting today, Steen Jacobsen, our CIO, also mentioned, well, this, even though we're talking about this second wave as potentially not being having such an impact as the first one, because we are trying to avoid lockdown as much as possible, it is the impact on industries and on businesses which have been struggling since the COVID in October, and if this second wave potentially is the one that could tip many into bankruptcies, and that obviously will continue to have a negative economic impact. Have you got a comment on that, Peter?
No, not so much actually. I think it just underscores the whole K-shape narrative. Because if you look at the earnings season, it's the earnings coming from Europe and the US are actually in aggregate terms actually quite good from the large companies, and I think that's the story here, that if you're big enough, you have a growth narrative, you can tap into equity markets and get funding, and you have access to credit lines from banks. And if you happens to be in the small SMB segment and you're in a country where you're very hard hit by the lockdowns, I think your future looks very, very, very bad.
That's where you need to worry. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think one of the most important lessons actually from yesterday we have on slide two was that long volatility seems to be your only parachute these days. Bonds are definitely dead. This is a 5 minute line chart on three different assets. So you have the orange line, which is the Eurostoxx 600 index. Then you have the green one, which is basically the core benchmark for European government bonds, all the way from the 1 year all the way out to 15 and 20 years maturities. You can see here it's flat as a pancake. It's almost the same picture if I had taken in US assets. And then you have that blue line here is Luxor's VIX futures enhanced roll. So it basically keeps continuous and rolling those positions in the first two VIX contracts, basically. So if volatility jumps or goes higher, this ETN, which holds these underlying VIX futures, will gain in value. And that's what you've seen here. So it seems to be that in a world with yields as flat as a pancake and central banks controlling those for the next 3 to 5, 4 years, you're simply not going to have that impact from bonds into your portfolio. So I think we'll have to look more into long volatility if you want to balance your risk in the portfolios. And I suspect that this could actually cause a pretty dramatic increase in hedging strategies and derivatives trading in the coming years, because this is going to be extremely important. Slide three is a little bit in the same ballpark. I just want to highlight where we are on the inner part of the VIX curve, and we're still very much in backwardation. The second contract is almost 20% below the first contract, which we are trading right now, which is the November contract, which you can see on the right-hand side of the slide deck on slide three here. So what I want to show here is that we still have much further to go on the whole volatility complex before we could call it cataclysmic and then maybe a bottom. But we are, this November contract is basically pricing in the aftermath of the US election, which is on Tuesday. And as you can see here, we're getting to some of the highest prices that we have seen in many months.
Yeah, and I think it's really difficult for this market and participants to figure out where the market is positioned going into that election. I think there's been some thoughts, at least a lot of bigger players out there thinking this is a blue wave risk, and that is dollar negative, treasury negative, in other words, yield curve steepening, but somehow not that risk negative. But I think a more extreme version of the blue wave could be actually a rocky ride for risk appetite as well. I penned a piece yesterday that's out on analysis.sac. So my second U.S. election countdown piece, where I went through five scenarios looking at what may happen and tried to assign a probability to these. I don't think I have any visibility beyond the average pollster or anybody else. But just as an academic exercise, and my sort of expectations based on my research are a little bit leaning more towards the blue wave scenario than perhaps many are. But you can read those and consider what happens. I think the blue wave, and I even have a what I call a blue tsunami scenario where the Democrats take back Texas and Georgia, which I think just really, really, really alters the U.S. Political environment for a generation. So have a look at that. It's certainly worth considering, especially if one wants to be positioned, whether it's in volatility, as Peter mentioned, but also in other asset classes. And to me, there's some pretty cheap volatility to be found, especially for the longer term in FX, for example, in the dollar for various scenarios well out into 2021. But I guess there was the news yesterday, Ola, on lockdowns or just the general risk deleveraging that was also spooking the crude market. And it looks like we're nearing some important support there as well.
Yes, absolutely. And returning to that slide 7, just keep an eye on that 38.70 level. If we do break, then there is a risk that we could potentially see a 10%. Drop down towards the mid 30s, but the market is obviously torn between right now the prospect of OPEC Plus not increasing production in January, the fact that we continue to see strong demand from Asia. Obviously, China is a sea of calm right now in this COVID mess, and they are obviously a big buyer of crude oil, and they will probably continue if prices drop even further. And against that, it's just it is a question of how much the latest surge will impact fuel demand in the short term. So we are seeing a market which in the short term at least has been left somewhat troubled.
And in FX terms, everything is setting up and take notice of crude. We've got dollar ruble towards the highs there, not that far from 80 again, which was the recent high before in late September, and stretching back to the March episode, it didn't even get matched back above that level back then. Euronaki above 11, that's a critical area. I think if we're sustaining above there, there's risk of a further squeeze. A lot of the Norwegians like to buy their own currency. There's some risk around that, and dollar Canada slipping above local resistance as well yesterday.
Saving the best for last.
Saving the best for last. It is a big earnings day today. We have Peter. We need to have you talk us through. Maybe this doesn't impact the market as much if it already has its own agenda coming into these earnings. But surely we have to react and see what these massive companies are saying after the close today. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's actually the declines yesterday have actually taken a little bit of the steam out of these stocks, which potentially could be a good thing going into the earnings release, because what we have seen and what we saw with Microsoft on Tuesday with their earnings was that despite growing earnings per share by 30% compared to last year and top line by 12% and giving a conservative outlook, the Microsoft were down 5% yesterday. And that could be the playbook for the rest of these major US technology companies. We have Apple, Amazon, Alphabet, and Facebook reporting today. And I suspect that they will all report very strong earnings. And I suspect or guess, as I've done for the past couple of weeks when we have talked about earnings, that little insert I have here on slide 8, that I think the blue line will actually creep above the consensus estimates for Q3. And actually that we will end the Q3 earnings season on a positive note, with earnings actually rebounding faster than expected by analysts. It's drowning in the sea of uncertainty with COVID-19 and US election. So I don't think it adds too much weight on the sentiment for now. In terms of the earnings in terms of the earnings today, I just want to highlight that I think Microsoft's earnings was, I think, a testimony to the strength of the cloud business. So I think actually Alphabet and Amazon will do quite well. We did write this preview, which you can read. It's from Monday on analysis.saxo under my role. We called it Patchy Clouds on Trillionaire's Row. And obviously it was a name or a link into whether the cloud business would actually be lingering because of Intel and SAP. But Microsoft showed that that's not the case. So, and I think Amazon will also be benefited from the increased adoption in e-commerce. And we know from Snapchat that online advertising has really ramped up here in Q3. So Alphabet and Facebook will probably deliver a pretty stellar result. And then the final one here is Apple. I think Apple is probably, sentiment-wise, one of the most important ones because it's the biggest company in the world. I think it looks like that the recycling or the sorry the re, uh, the cycle of people renewing their iPhones is actually accelerating. And with the new 5G technology and the new iPhone 12, I think there's a lot of expectations for that one. So I think the Apple one is the guidance for their important quarter here and during the holiday season is what matters more than the actual results from the previous quarter.
All right. And that besides big earnings today, we have a pretty busy economic calendar. I haven't previewed the ECB much. There's a lot of speculation about what they're going to do. I think it's all largely irrelevant whether they go now or go in December. I would expect, given these new lockdowns, that we see a tilt towards at least doing something now. That something could be accelerating the pace of purchases, tipping the hat, making it clear what's going to happen in December. But even if they go whole hog, I'm not sure if it's a massive surprise relative to what we've already seen in terms of the sentiment shift that's unfolded in the wake of this new COVID-19 impact in Europe. So I'm not expecting
a suggestion, John. I actually think that because she have hinted Lagarde that the ECB wants to act on the COVID-19. The problem in Europe, as we've talked about so many times in this podcast and previously, is that we don't have the same fiscal monetary integration in Europe as we see in the US. So we much more constrained in our approach. I don't think it's unreasonable to think that maybe ECB could hint today that they want to pursue something along the lines of Bank of England with direct lending to small and medium-sized businesses. It's probably the quickest way. Whether it's unconstitutional for maybe Germany or whatever, I don't know. But I think the ECB could potentially hint that would be very potent, I think, if they signal that.
I would find that more euro positive than euro negative, because it's while it's seen as dovish, it's more aggressive and more likely to trigger real economic outcomes and results demand. What everybody thinks is lacking in Europe, which is the demand side of the economy being stimulated. But in any case, I think the fiscal side, and that would fall into the fiscal side if they do somehow manage to innovate. Something tells me ECB is a little bit too slow on that front. But we could see something like that certainly in December if the political heads can agree on that approach as well. And then we have the first estimate of the Q3 GDP out of the US. That's expected at now I don't have the figures in front of me, but essentially the same rate that we saw it dropping in Q2, if you look at an annualized basis, something like 32%. A silly number. Basically, we have to say that we dropped, the year-on-year dropped in Q2 by 9% and expected to grow about 9% in Q3. And it's more about the concern from here, because we all know that 9% growth was largely on the back of unprecedented stimulus as well, and personal income growth that was off the charts. Also, the latest weekly numbers out of the US, flash CPI out of Germany. I'm not expecting fireworks there, and some interesting data points out of Asia, especially the South Korean September. Well, it's September, but it's their industrial production data out there. And then we'll look for the PCE inflation data out of the US tomorrow. But I think really what's going on here is that all our nerves are on edge, whether it's COVID resurgence, whether it's U.S. election anticipation. This is a move that is, we've crossed beyond some key trigger levels on the charts. People are nervous, so we need to stay careful out there, and we'll see where things stand at tomorrow's Saxo Market Call. For today, thanks for joining.